Then, of course, before you serve champagne, you must, if possible, chill it. Perhaps about 48 degrees is correct. In your modern American refrigerators, which have freezing compartments, this cooling should not require more than 1 hour. In other types of refrigerators, perhaps a little more.
If you've listened closely, that makes you a qualified expert yourself on how to choose and care for your favorite champagne. This is Monitor, going places and doing things. Take one. Once more, this is Monitor, Frank Gallup on deck. It's time again to monitor that mass evacuation exercise begun earlier today in eastern Pennsylvania. At the Reading Municipal Airport, they're feeding and checking refugees from the Chester area, an area affected by fallout in a mock atomic attack. For Monitor's on-the-scene report, here's Martin Miller of station WARW.
The rain, which plagued Operation Evacuation earlier this morning at the General Carl A. Spots Airfield here in Reading, Pennsylvania, has ceased. The sun is shining, and Operation Evacuation is proceeding along an alternate plan. More than 300 persons from media who traveled 50 miles in an auto convoy are now being fed here on the apron at the airport. Later, they'll be transported to the Indiantown Gat Military Reservation, about 35 miles east of here. And now, at our monitor microphone, we have Colonel Philip Neuweiler, commander of the Pennsylvania Civil Air Patrol, who wrote this problem, and Dr. Richard Gerstel, Pennsylvania Director of Civil Defense. Colonel Neuweiler, in your opinion, for our monitor microphone, what do you think of the problem so far?
It's a good problem, very good problem. The secondary plan had to be put in operation because of inclement flying weather.
I think we might explain to our audience that we had two plans set up ready to go. Will you explain the two plans for us briefly?
The secondary plan was set up in the event that aircraft could not be used. And if we have any kind of disaster, you can't just wait for clear weather. The unit must move and move into the disaster area, and that has been planned and timed exactly. It worked out just as we had planned it.
Colonel Neuweiler, how much planning actually was necessary to complete this operation?
We started this planning last October in 54.
So it's been quite a lot of planning going on to get things into effect. With us also is Dr. Richard Gerstel, Pennsylvania Director of Civil Defense. Dr. Gerstel, in your opinion, how are things going today?
Things are moving very well. Of course, the fact that the weather interfered, it makes it even better as a test, because that sort of thing might happen in an actual bombing. Of course, what we're doing here today is following up on Wednesday's Operation Alert, which was basically a paper exercise, and this time we are moving the people and the vehicles and the aircraft that must be moved in actual emergency. And the only way you can do that is by trying it and ironing out your mistakes and getting it so that you can actually do it and not just do it on paper.
Colonel Neuweiler, how many people are actually participating in today's problem?
With the Civil Defense and Civil Air Patrol, over 3,000.
And how many people in Civil Air Patrol are participating?
Our strength report shows 1,300.
1,300 people. How many planes were to have been taking part in today's operation?
163 were registered.
There was only a very little, a minimum amount of flying today, right?
Up until noon, practically none.
Well, you two gentlemen represent two great organizations, the Civil Air Patrol and the Civil Defense. Dr. Gerstel, what sort of cooperation have you received from Civil Defense?
We have the closest cooperation with CAP and Civil Defense, both at the state and the local levels. They work hand in hand just as they must in actual emergency. And this, again, is another actual test of what we would do in time of actual emergency.
And Colonel Neuweiler, I think you should mention the fact that all your personnel are volunteer personnel. They are receiving no money for this operation, right?
We're all volunteers. We even pay for the privilege of belonging to Civil Air Patrol, and everything is out of our own pockets just for the privilege of serving our country.
How long have you been associated with Civil Air Patrol?
Since December the 1st, 1941.
Well, thank you very, very much, gentlemen. That's the story at the moment from Reading, Pennsylvania. This is Martin Miller, now back to Monitor in Radio Central, New York.
Thank you, Martin Miller of station WRAW. And that's just a mock evacuation exercise in case any of you think it's real. And because it is only a test, thank goodness, let's get on to a monitor item of more pleasant character.
Some people have it easy. Take Lola, for instance. The song says, whatever Lola wants. Make up your mind to have no regrets. Recline yourself, resign yourself, you're through. I always get what I aim for, and your heart and soul is what I. Whatever Lola wants, Lola gets. Take off your coat, don't you know, you can't win. You're no exception to the rule, I'm irresistible, you fool, give in. Whatever Lola wants, Lola gets. Take off your coat, don't you know you can't win. You're no exception to the rule, I'm irresistible, you fool. Monitor sneaked a peek at the Current Look magazine and then talked with Bert and Susie Todd of Pittsburgh about their honeymoon in Shangri-La halfway round the world and reaching 12,000 feet up into the blue, where the little kingdom of Bhutan sits in a beautiful valley 90 miles wide and 200 miles long, rimmed with the craggy peaks of the Himalayas. Bert had met the Rajah's daughter while he was a student at Oxford University, and the royal family had said, come to us, come to Bhutan for your honeymoon. The receptions for the Todds were many and impressive and colorful. The country was theirs, and here he tells of some of the arrangements made for their honeymoon in Shangri-La and of the people there.
I really have never known more hospitable people. Anything we wanted to do was done for us, and they're so kind. And really, I don't think there are any people in this world that have a more wonderful sense of humor than the Bhutanese.
Oh, the sense of humor is magnificent of the Bhutanese. However, the thing that I liked very much is when you go and visit people, sometimes they're very inclined to make you do this or do that. We were left alone when we wanted to, and when other times were arranged, we could do anything we felt like. For example, remember that night of the bear shoot?
Do I? You were so mad at me.
Well, I deserve to be mad at you. Anyone that goes after a bear with a .22 rifle, I think is absolutely ridiculous.
I didn't have the .22.
Tesla had the .22, but it was ridiculous for her going along with the .22, too.
Well, perhaps it was, but once we started, we just couldn't stop in that farmhouse. I've never been so excited in all my life.
Well, you finally got a lot of things. You got a leopard and a bear. I think the only thing I shot was a couple of pigeons, if I recall correctly.
No, didn't you get a mountain goat when we were up on the, what was the name of, Choconaw?
Yes, I did get a mountain goat, but I was bound to get one. The herd numbered something like a couple of thousand, and you're bound to get a couple of shots in.
The Bhutanese people, they practice Buddhism, but it's not the Buddhism that you read about in magazines. It's more of a Lamaism, isn't it?
It's the Lamaism of Tibet. But the great thing about the Bhutanese people is that their main desire is to remain in peace, to practice their religion, and to live a life solely of understanding with their neighbors and themselves. It's a very forceful country and a very forceful type of religion.
They certainly have made great strides as far as developing their government and becoming more and more democratic in their ways.
Well, one main thing that I'm pleased about, and I think that, of course, the honeymoon was wonderful, but I think that we were fortunate, and I underline that, in knowing these type of people, and that I only hope that they, in the future, will come to know America as we know them.
Their honeymoon over, the Todds left their Shangri-La in October, before the snows choked the Himalayan passes. And now they're back in America. They're working on the Land of the Thunder Dragon, the story of this remote little kingdom that is yet to be caught in the mad whirl of the political turbulence that is, of course, sweeping through most of Asia.
Bang goes old Betsy, my only gun is Betsy. I can travel far and wide with Betsy by my side. One day I went away from town. I aimed to grin a wildcat down. The beast and I began to stare. It was a growling grizzly bear. Bang goes old Betsy, one and only Betsy. I can travel far and wide with Betsy by my side. When I was a fishing in the rain, a trout along as a wagon train began to pull me out to sea. A good idea occurred to me. Oh, bang, bang, little Betsy, one and only Betsy. I can travel far and wide with Betsy by my side. I was getting whittling sticks. I got myself into a fix. The snow was frozen on the ground. A pack of hungry wolves come round. Bang, little Betsy, the one and only Betsy. I can travel far and wide with Betsy by my side. When I was a-riding through the woods to trade off skins for bought goods, 40 arrows hit a tree. I knew the Sioux was after me. Bang, little Betsy, my one and only Betsy. I can travel far and wide with Betsy by my side. The only time I draw my gun, believe me, it is not in fun. I use it for defending me. I shoot for life and liberty. Bang goes old Betsy, a one and only Betsy. I can travel far and wide with Betsy by my side.
This is Monitor, and we're approaching the midway point in the weekend's 29th hour. We'll go wherever news is developing on Monitor. We'll listen to the best in music. All this direct and transcribed on Monitor. In a minute, the eternal light, and then at 1 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, Monitor Digest. The highlights of yesterday on Monitor.
This is Monitor, the new NBC radio service.
This is Monitor, the new NBC radio service.
Stand by, Moscow.
Just ahead, direct pickups from Moscow,
Moscow,
San Francisco, Hollywood.
No, not now, San Francisco.
Jim Fleming at the communicator's desk.
All right,
Monitor Digest will bring a wedding, an upcoming TV star, Orson Welles from London, Henry Morgan looking at last night's TV, highlights from over 24 hours of Monitor transmissions. First, the late news headlines. Hong Kong, American consular officials, after waiting all day at the Chinese border for those three ex-GIs whose release had been promised, have returned empty-handed today. Leningrad. Indian Prime Minister Nehru and his party have reached this Russian city on their tour of the Soviet Union. San Francisco. The delegates are assembling for tomorrow's opening of the UN 10th anniversary program. More on this by direct report in a moment. Tokyo. Russia has finally returned 15 small naval vessels that the U.S. loaned her during World War II. It's taken a long time to get them back. This weekend, for the first time in 7 years, NBC has a reporter inside Moscow. Khrushchev gave Jack Bagan a visa when Khrushchev, the Russian boss, visited Yugoslavia. We have Jack Bagan on the Moscow circuit. Gordon Fraser is with him. Go ahead, Gordon.
Hello, Jack Bagan in Moscow. This is Gordon Fraser in New York calling Jack Bagan in Moscow. Fraser in New York.
Jack Bagan in Moscow calling Monitor.
Monitor, replying to your call, Jack Bagan, is the Soviet peace offensive being reflected in the newspapers?
Yes, in the newspapers and every place you go, every place I have been in Russia so far, I have seen the big signs of nothing but peace in the world. The peace campaign is being waged as strong here as it is in the outside world.
Jack Bagan, Monitor, can you read me? You're still reading me? All right, another question, if you will. Since you last had contact with Nikolai Khrushchev, Secretary General of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, in Belgrade, I believe it was, where they got together with Tito on a conference, and you personally had some pleasantries and exchanges with him, do you now plan to see Mr. Khrushchev at any time?
I hope so. I have great hopes about it. As a matter of fact, I expect within the next 2 or 3 days to get an answer, and I think there is every reason to believe that I will have an opportunity to talk to Khrushchev and also to Bulganin.
How are people in Moscow talking about the United States?
Not many people get a chance to talk to us. However, the people whom I have met that speak English are very much interested in many things about America, and particularly the music that they are just now beginning to hear. As I said before, there is a black market actually going on in music and recording. How they get them in, I don't know, but they know the songs and they like them. Also, I was very surprised today to meet a man on the street, a shabbily dressed man, talk back very vigorously to a uniformed
Jack Bagan, this is Fraser in Monitor. Thank you very much. We've got your signal. A little rough in a couple of places, but we did a repeat on the first, and we've got your broadcast, and thank you very much for your answering the questions. We'll be in contact with you. That's about all for here for now, and good luck to you.
Gordon Fraser talking to Jack Bagan in Moscow. First time in 7 years an NBC reporter has been broadcasting, this was by phone, from the Russian capital. Why are the Russians so friendly these days? Well, the opening of the UN 10th anniversary program doesn't come till tomorrow, but with delegates from all over the world arriving, behind-the-scenes action is beginning to develop today. Monitor brings you now an up-to-the-second rundown on the story as we call in San Francisco and Pauline Frederick.
When I left the St. Francis Hotel to come to the studio, Secret Service were making final checks on security arrangements. President Eisenhower arrives at the hotel around 10 o'clock tonight to spend the night. The first time the presidential suite has been occupied since President Taft was here. And Secret Service and UN Security are making a final check of the Opera House today from roof to basement, where tomorrow afternoon the President will open the UN General Assembly's commemoration of the 10th anniversary of the signing of the Charter. The aggregation of top foreign ministers will be completed during the day with the arrival of Secretary Dulles, British Foreign Minister Macmillan, and French Foreign Minister Pinay. The British and French ministers will meet Soviet Foreign Minister Molotov tonight at a special dinner given by the Colombian ambassador. Mr. Dulles will not complete the big foursome until their first private meeting at the Fairmont tomorrow night to plan for the conference of their respective heads of state in Geneva beginning July 18th. This is truly a day of final preparation here for what is expected to be an historic week. This is Pauline Frederick in San Francisco. Now back to Monitor and Radio Central New York.
And there's other drama in San Francisco today in the sports world. And Monitor's going to be on the scene at the National Open. Jack Fleck, a 32-year-old former caddy from Davenport, Iowa, came out of nowhere to tie Ben Hogan. They're going to have a playoff today. It's the playoff round of the National Open Golf Tournament. Let's get up to date on this story as Monitor returns now to San Francisco and the Olympic Country Club.
Fever here in San Francisco this morning, and most everyone is getting ready for that trek toward the Olympic Club. It's located right way on the edges of San Francisco on the ocean. And the playoff this afternoon between Ben Hogan and Jack Fleck. It's a foggy day in the city, but out here on the links, it's even foggier and colder. The weatherman promises the sun will burn through the fog early this afternoon. But usually that means San Francisco in the interior of the city. On the edges by the ocean, that fog can sock in and stay that way all through the day. But fog or no, Jack Fleck is getting set for the biggest day in his life. But it will have to be something to top his performance yesterday. The way he tied Ben Hogan on his final hole yesterday has been called one of the most dramatic finishes of all time. Fleck says he was on the 14th hole when he heard Hogan had finished with a 287. The 32-year-old golf pro from Davenport, Iowa, was one under par at the time. He needed two more birdies to catch Hogan. Fleck says someone told him, just play it safe. Then he added, but I said I was going to play as hard as I could and not play it safe. Fleck reached the 18th, needing a birdie for a tie. He hit a 3-wood off the tee into the heavy grass. Then came a great pressure shot, a 7-iron from the grass, which wound up only 7 feet from the pin. It was a difficult putt, but Fleck sank it for a birdie and a tie. I felt that putt would go in, Fleck said later. It went in. And all I can say is I was very fortunate. He's going to need some more of that luck this afternoon when he matches another 18 holes with one of the greats of all time, little Ben Hogan. Sammy Snead, who wound up in a third-place tie, calls the Olympic Club course the toughest to figure out I've ever seen. I've never played it myself, but many an afternoon I've heard the moans and groans in the club room from the golfers who have, and some of the things they say aren't even printable. This is Jerry Gordon in San Francisco, now back to Monitor and Radio Central in New York.
And all through this afternoon, Lawson Little, Harry Von Zell, and a team of reporters will be on the scene at the Olympic Country Club for Monitor. You'll get any thrilling moment that happens, the results first on Monitor. More sports now, Gordon Frazier.
Golf is sure be good to be out there, Jim. Well, we'll have the Major League ball scores when they come in. And here are the teams that will be playing. First, the National League, where doubleheaders will feature Pittsburgh at Cincinnati and Philadelphia at Chicago. Single games include Brooklyn at St. Louis and the New York Giants at Milwaukee. Over in the American League, it's a double bill with the White Sox at Yankee Stadium. White Sox are out on top now. Another at Baltimore with Detroit, and still another doubleheader in Washington with Kansas City. Cleveland has a single at Boston. That's a quickie look at it, Jim.
Checking the nation's press, the Buffalo Courier-Express in editorials today, Father's Day, terms of appreciation. Father, says the Courier-Express, who has a good job to do of selling himself to the world, is not particularly good at that sort of thing in the relaxed atmosphere of the family circle. The value Dad sets on family ties is contingent on certain considerations which should be of interest to his loved ones. When you think it over, the best thing about Father's Day is the reflection that the average individual's life expectancy has been extended considerably. How do you suppose Father feels about that when the youngsters are waking him up this morning? And how does Eddie Fisher feel about Father?
Hi there. This is Eddie Fisher. You know, they say that Pop always pays. Well, with Father's Day upon us, let's just switch that old saying and pay respects to Pop right now with the official new Father's Day song.
It's just 13 minutes past the hour in London, where it's not Father's Day, and wherever you are, it's 13 minutes past the hour. Henry Morgan just ahead, Orson Welles just ahead, Art Buchwald from Paris, comedian Jonathan Winters. Bob and Ray will be with you this afternoon, so will Roger Price. The next moments are devoted to Monitor Digest, the high points of our transmission of the past 24 hours. Henry Morgan, you know, is engaged by Monitor as a TV observer, not really a critic. Henry can sit down and look at any network he wants to on TV. The idea is that if you've been busy and out last night, Henry comes back here to report to you so that you are au courant as to what happened on the picture tube. Henry spent a faithful evening looking at a number of shows. He doesn't look at them all, but he has discovered a new network, Network L. In any event, here's how Henry Morgan surveyed last evening's television.
But it cleared my ear. I had, you know, when it goes peep peep deedle deep peep deedle deep deep peep deep. I always feel that little people in funny hats are dancing in my ear. Well, good evening, anybody. Here's Morgan, like Al said, with another of Monitor's great public services. For those of you who are out of town today, here is a review of what you missed on television. For example, at 10 o'clock this morning, Eastern Time, you missed the Pinky Lee Show. Unfortunately, I can't tell you much about it. I also missed the Pinky Lee Show. I have missed it consistently for many years. The reason for that is that once I saw it. Ever since then, well, at 1:55, You missed the Yankees playing the White Sox. You Yankee fans are lucky you missed it. Don't look now, but guess who's in second place. And in the National League, I reviewed the Giants-Milwaukee game in radio. It's not my job, but it's where my heart lies, bleeding. At 6 o'clock, you missed the news, weather, and sports. The news was taken right out of the afternoon paper and read out loud by a nice man with a necktie. Then the weather was guessed by a nice man in a smock, and then some pest had to remind everybody of the Giants again. At 7:30, you missed a show called Beat the Clock. I didn't see that either, because I was having dinner, but I can guess what happened. A fellow and his wife came on, and they had 30 seconds to see whether he could toss paper cups into a big box that she had on her head. Now, ordinarily, he can flip a cigarette butt from the living room right into the dispose-all in the kitchen on one bounce, but this time he couldn't get one paper cup into the box. So the MC gave them a consolation prize, and then the husband and wife went and sat down, watched the rest of the show, and after it was over, they went outside and got in their car. Halfway home, the husband said, dear, and the wife said, shut up, stupid. And here it is almost midnight, and she hasn't spoken to him yet. At 7:45, there was a talk on Network L entitled, and I'm not kidding, Is Capitalism Raising Its Glittering Head in Russia? Well, the answer is either yes or no, so I didn't tune in. After all, if the answer is yes, the man giving the talk is just dreaming, and if the answer is no, I knew that anyway. At 10 o'clock, you missed the George Gobel show, and I jotted down a couple of the jokes for you. This is what I'm really paid for. First, George started talking about Father's Day, and being a father, he said, I am a father thrice over. At least I hope it's over. And there was a laugh there. Then he said, he liked his wife as much as the next fella, but sometimes he liked the next fella better. There was a laugh there. Then he got a guitar and sang Happy Birthday to You to John Scott Trotter for some reason I didn't catch. But Trotter liked it, or at least he laughed. Then Nat Pendleton. Do you remember him? Gangster type in the movies? Wrestler? Nat Pendleton came on the Gobel Show, and they did a cute thing where he pointed a pistol at the audience and said they had to watch the upcoming commercial. But I sort of blanked out. I'll tell you why. A couple of years ago, I took I took all the money I ever made in radio, and I went to France. And at a hotel in Cannes, I met Nat Pendleton and his wife. And I was pretty excited about meeting this big movie star, and I sort of hung around him. And a few miles from the hotel is a place called Eden Rock. It's a sort of a restaurant built right at the edge of the Mediterranean, and down below is a pool carved out of the solid rock, and below that, the sea. It's a fine place. Well, I had a car, and I used to drive Pendleton down there every afternoon. I'd go swimming, fool around. Pendleton'd stay upstairs and play gin rummy. Well, one day he asked me if I wanted to play gin rummy, and I allowed as how I would, so I sat down with him about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and by 3 o'clock, I had lost $600. Now, it's not much by Hollywood standards, but it was a lot in radio, and that's how I went blank in the middle of the Gobel Show. It just a big money came up before my eyes, and when it cleared away, a Peter Lorre was on the screen. Same show. And Gobel was sort of a private eye, and Lorre was saying, someone has stolen Lake Erie. I went blank again for a few seconds. And then I don't know, this may not be clear to you, and you may think I'm making all of this up, but if you're sitting around your house all by yourself, and my television set's in the bedroom, and you sit there on the edge of the bed, and a man suddenly says, somebody has stolen Lake Erie, you can black out. So then I came to, and Lorre said, actually, I'm taller than Peter Lorre, but I look short because I have weak legs and a heavy stomach. And that makes me crouch. So I blanked until about 10:30. And at 10:30, there was James Gleason listed on Network A and James Gleason listed on Network B. If you don't believe me, look it up in the paper. The two shows, one was The Big Umbrella, one called The Frame-Up. I couldn't make up my mind, so I tuned in monitor to see if I still had a job and if they were going to need me. And it was on, and they did, and I did, thank goodness. I'm sorry that the news isn't more exciting today, but perhaps tomorrow. So Morgan will be on the same corner in front of the cigar store again, by the grace of God, tomorrow at approximately the same or whatever time they guess at it will be. Good night.
Well, that was Henry Morgan's report on last evening's television, and just as he said, he'll be on the air tonight on Monitor, so you don't have to look at a bit of television today. Monitor serves you in just this way, and Henry Morgan will report fully.
This is Monitor, going places, doing things. Take one.
Time. In London, Orson Welles is playing in Moby Dick. And in London, the time is 21 minutes past the hour. The voice of Orson Welles, long familiar to American radio, turns up again today on Monitor in this digest version. The BBC interviewed Orson after his success in Moby Dick. Here's the story.
This week saw the premiere at London's Duke of York's Theatre of Moby Dick, a new play by Orson Welles, based on the famous novel by Herman Melville. The play is staged as a rehearsal, with a tangle of ropes, a few packing cases, and a couple of ladders as the only stage props. Immediately after the performance, Cora Kay went backstage to the crowded dressing room of Orson Welles, who also plays the lead part of Captain Ahab, and interviewed him for this program.
Mr. Welles, I understand you've been working on this play for a long time.
Yes, I started trying to write it about 10 years ago. I was going to do a version of it here in London about 10 years ago for Cochrane.
I see.
And then I wrote another draft about 3 years later, and after some time, gave it up, and it was only last year that I started to work on it again seriously and finished this script in January.
Had you always planned on doing it in London?
Well, yes, I try to do everything I can in London.
Why?
It's such a wonderful theater town, you know.
Better than New York?
No, but it's a wonderful, well, it is a wonderful theater town. We're going to do this in New York, too.
Oh, are you?
Yes, yes.
What is it about Moby Dick that particularly fascinated you?
I think it's a great tragic theme, and one that, because of the peculiar nature of the story, has never been put in the theater.
I understand there's a film on Moby Dick now, and I understand you're also in it.
Yes, I am in it.
What part did you play?
I play a part that I play in the stage, too, Father Mapple.
Oh, yes. Did you find it very different working in the film? Than
well, the film, of course, is different, because the film shows you everything and doesn't talk about it.
Yes.
And the play talks about it, doesn't show you anything.
It shows you quite a lot, judging from the performance tonight. Did you get any ideas particularly from the film?
No, not at all. The play was finished before.
I see.
There are no ideas from a film. The film and theater don't bump each other very much.
I noticed.
I think it'll be a very, very good film, the Houston one, wonderful one. But it's not a. This is a play in blank verse, and the difference between the two is enormous.
Yes, quite. I noticed in the program that you're planning on continuing here in London after the.
Yes, in the autumn.
In the autumn, is it? And
yes.
You're planning to do a repertory season.
Yes, I hope to. I hope
do you have
to
any
very much. Yes.
Plans yet as to what you're
yes,
going
to I'd
do?
Yes, I'd like to do a novel of Hemingway's, a dramatization of a novel of Hemingway's called The Sun Also Rises.
Oh, yes, I know that.
And also a Shakespearean play, Timon of Athens, which
oh,
is
yes.
very seldom played.
Yes, I know the play. You seem to go in for dramatizations of novels.
Not just this year.
This year. Are you planning on a long stay in London, then?
Well, I'm going away to the south of France for a couple of months after this run. And I'll be back in October to do the season. I have to make a film in the south of France.
When do you think this will come to New York?
I should think in the late part of this next season.
Well, we'll be looking forward to it. I'll
Thank
be back
you.
There myself by then.
I hope.
A wonderful evening for me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Miss Monitor will be giving the temperatures through the day, and until she arrives, improvisation. New York, 72, cloudy. Boston, 86, fair. Washington, 66, rain. Birmingham, 79. Atlanta, 69, cloudy. Miami, 78, showers. Los Angeles, 59, cloudy. Kansas City, 81. Minneapolis, St. Paul, 75. In a moment, London. Monitoring BBC, and we recorded a bit of a cricket match from Lord's. Here it is, by the way. Here's the excerpt we took earlier from the BBC.
This is the British Broadcasting Corporation. Cricket. For those who just come into your lunches, incidentally, the gentleman made 267 this morning. Harder caught all the first three, and pretty good catches two of them were. And we are going to see another over from Brown, bowling from the nursery end, where he's been hammering away and bowling really very well indeed for the last hour and a half. And Brown's going to bowl now with a slip and a gully and a silly mid-off. Hutton was caught hooking, caught off his glove by Carter, a very good catch, at leg slip. John Langridge was caught gliding. My goodness, he's very nearly got him that time.
Romney, are you there in London?
I'm here.
Well, what in blazes is going on there, anyhow?
Well, search me, but I've got the man here who can tell you, and that's John Ollott, who is probably the most famous, widely known cricket commentator in the world. And supposing you ask him...
Well, sir, can you tell us?
I can. What's going on is a sort of intellectual form of baseball. You see, after all, we gave you this game. Our first major overseas tours were in Canada and the United States, where we played representative matches with them. Well, the game, very quickly, was once described by an English poet, though not very poetically, as casting a ball at three straight sticks and defending the same with a fork.
Well, I guess that's all the news we're going to get to of cricket at this moment. This portion of Monitor is devoted to a Monitor Digest. We are going to bring you Jonathan Winters in the next half hour, Art Buchwald, and we've just learned that there's a direct report coming up from the National Open where there's a very dramatic story today, as you know, the playoff between Ben Hogan and that former caddy who came up out of nowhere, Jack Fleck, 32 years old, from Davenport, Iowa. Monitor will live with the National Open this afternoon in this exciting playoff. And we just learned this moment, President Eisenhower is leaving for San Francisco. We're going to Washington right after station break to cover that on the scene. This is Monitor going places.
This is Monitor, the new NBC radio service.
This is Monitor. Monitor music time at half past the hour.
This is Monitor, and the time, 25 and a half minutes before the hour, wherever you are, except in certain portions opposite the national date line, and I couldn't possibly make that out in our clocks now. Monitor, in the next half hour, is going to go to Washington to cover live the president's takeoff for San Francisco. We'll hear the voice of Molotov from San Francisco, that's recorded. And many other features, including our Monitor Digest, which, if you're with us, you understand, gets interrupted frequently for the live breaking stories that happen. Yes, just news here again. We're going back to the National Open. This is Monitor, the new NBC radio service, Jim Fleming reporting. Just ahead, comedy by Jonathan Winters. But we interrupt our regular schedule now. President Eisenhower, at this moment, is going to take off from Washington for San Francisco. Right now, the White House correspondents are at the airport, and they say he's making preparations, and they're making preparations, they say, so they'll be on hand when the president arrives. Bulletins are out overcoming bulletins here. The president apparently is not there, but the correspondents are. Well, in any event, for an on-the-spot report, Monitor takes you now to Metz Terminal in Washington and Ray Shearer.
It's a damp day in Washington, a steady drizzle coming down all morning. We're speaking from the edge of the airstrip at Washington National Airport. Just before us is the White House plane, the Columbine, being checked for takeoff with the president for San Francisco at 3. And just behind it, a United airliner, a DC-7, chartered by White House correspondents to follow the president out west, only to be there when he lands. The plane will have to take off an hour in advance, which is shortly. I've called one of the White House reporters who's just about to get on his plane, Merriman Smith, the United Press. Smitty, what are you going to do for 8 hours while riding to San Francisco?
Well, considering that we've just come off the civil defense exercise and 2 days in Gettysburg, I intend to sleep all the way to San Francisco.
How long have you been home in the last 7 days?
About 3 hours this morning.
And you take off again Wednesday for New England.
Happy Father's Day.
Were you along 10 years ago when Harry Truman flew to San Francisco?
Yes, we were. It was quite an epical flight. We got there 2 hours behind him. We almost missed the speech. That was for the Japanese peace treaty conference. No, that 10 years ago. We went to Olympia, Washington,
and
waited there for 5 or 6 days. He had trouble. He couldn't get the meeting over.
What do you hear about this speech the president's going to give tomorrow?
Well, I understand it's going to be a big foreign policy pronouncement. We don't know exactly what it says, but that's what the general area will be.
How long do you stay out there after the speech?
Well, we get back to Washington at very early Tuesday morning. Just a quick turnaround.
Time to change your shirt and start out for New England, huh?
Yes, sir.
How many of these trips do you suppose you've made with the president in the last, how many years, 12 years?
Oh, I'd guess several hundred, Ray. I never add them up.
Well, thank you, Smitty. It's time to get on that airplane.
Yeah, we better pack.
Off to San Francisco. That's Merriman Smith, United Press, author of the recent book, Meet Mr. Eisenhower. Bill Lawrence, the New York Times, just arrived. They're going up the ramp. Ray Sher at Washington Airport. Now back to Monitor, Radio Central, New York.
Well, we have complete coverage of Merriman Smith boarding a plane, Bill Lawrence boarding a plane. Monitor goes everywhere. And those White House correspondents are leaving now, you see, so they'll be in San Francisco when the president arrives in San Francisco so that they, the White House correspondents who see him every day, can see him when he arrives in San Francisco. Well, Monitor has a real first this weekend, though. You know, Mr. Molotov is doing some broadcasting and telecasting, but he appeared first on Monitor. And he did it yesterday with Pauline Frederick in San Francisco, and here's how it happened.
As Mr. Molotov was about to be driven off, I tapped on the window of his car. It was lowered a few inches, and then still further when he saw the NBC microphone in my hand. I shouted to him from outside the car, "How does the United States look?" He responded in Russian, and then his interpreter, Mr. Troyanovsky, proceeded to translate. Here is the first radio interview with Soviet Foreign Minister Molotov since he reached the United States.
Благодарю за внимание, оказанное вами делегацией, прибывшей из Советского Союза.
Thank you for the welcome given by you to the delegation of the Soviet Union upon its arrival here.
Are you looking forward to a good conference?
Разрешите через вас передать сердечный привет жителям Сан-Франциско, города, где была учреждена Организация Объединенных Наций.
Allow me to convey through you cordial greetings to the people of San Francisco, the city where the United Nations organization was born.
Okay.
That was Soviet Foreign Minister Molotov in his first American broadcast. This is Pauline Frederick in San Francisco. Now back to Monitor in Radio Central, New York.
This is the Monitor Digest on Sunday afternoon, New York time. Monitor checks TV. One of the big shows on TV this weekend, I believe it's Monday, is 1938, when NBC will go back to that celebrated time. Out in Hollywood, Monitor takes its microphones to a TV rehearsal where Jonathan Winters, a young comedian of whom you'll be hearing a great deal more, is in rehearsal. He rehearses just this way for 1938.
I remember 1938. Oh, how I remember 1938. I was in the United States Marines. Yes, I was pretty young, just a chicken. As I look back, we were working on something. You know, shining up buckets, something of that nature. But we were getting ready to attack some island. As I look back, I can see Lieutenant Matthews now. Oh, I can see Lieutenant Matthews now. Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning. Most of you should be familiar with my face, name, and rank by now. I'm Lieutenant Matthews. First Lieutenant Matthews. Don't ever forget it. I didn't spend 6 years at Yale for nothing. Cost my family plenty. And now to get on with this chart. Most of you people are familiar with the chart, right? It's a great deal like a map. This is the island of Oahu. Over 1,500 people on that island. That's what we're going to attack tomorrow at 0400. I'd hope to be able to go with you. But they need me here. However, I shall be observing some 5,000 yards off through heavy lenses. That's all, people. Gunnery Sergeant Grider, I think you have a few words. Until dawn, then, gentlemen.
Well, you heard what he said. It isn't going to be easy.
And I have to get in on that island, wipe out the monkeys, the coconuts, the sea bees. You over there, you still sick. You were sick when we left Frisco.
Gunny, Gunny, I was sick the day I know that I was drafted into this outfit. I don't know what it is. I've been landing that forward whatever, ain't a breath of air coming out of that thing. And all those birds up there keep circling around me. I know I'm going to...
Don't worry about those birds. Those aren't buzzards, they're seagulls. Now pull up your camp chair. And you over there, yeah, I'm talking to you, Ice, reading the comic book.
Ah, for 2 cents, I'd drop you like a bad habit.
Now, that's the type of fellow we don't want in our outfit. And you, farm boy, playing that guitar.
Old dog Gray, ever faithful. Grief does not drive him away. He is gentle, he is kind. I hate you, Gunny.
You're on report. And when did you join a sickness?
My name's Frederickson, I'm the clerk. I attend to the papers, point systems, medical reports. Pass out what medals there are. I'm certainly no troublemaker.
Get down below. Now tomorrow morning at 0400, we rise and shine. At 0600, we disembark and look real great. Because they might be taking pictures. That's it, kiddies. Good night.
Now hear this. Now hear this. Section C. Section C Marines prepare to disembark. Marines prepare to disembark.
Well, gentlemen, you'll have to admit it's a lovely day. Not a cloud in the sky. Right, Colonel?
Yeah. Very true. Very true. Yes, yeah.
All right, move out. Take your git fiddles and your guitars and your comic books and get in that craft.
Old dog Gray, ever faithful. Boy, these boats get smaller and smaller, don't they?
Well, don't look at me, gentlemen. After you. Here's one for Mother.
Man, I don't know about the rest of you people, but this is the wrong island. These people are trying to kill us. Hey, sailor, hold that gate on that ship. I'm coming.
Jonathan Winters, you'll be seeing him tonight if you look at TV on 1938, along with Groucho Marx. And if you don't look, Henry Morgan will tell you all about it on Monitor.
This is Monitor, going places, doing things. Take one.